I'm expecting you.
Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast, the show that explores what it really takes to live a healthier, more vibrant, and more meaningful life. Today's episode is a must listen if you've ever worried about your cholesterol levels or being told that they're too high without fully understanding what that actually means for your health. I'm joined by a renowned cardiologist, integrative medicine specialist, and thought leader, Dr. Riaz Mattara, and we're diving deep into one of the most misunderstood markers in modern medicine, cholesterol. We explore whether cholesterol really is the risk factor for heart disease we once thought it was, how declining hormone levels affect cardiovascular health, and what you should actually be testing if you want to protect your heart. We also unpack the latest research, the role of inflammation, metabolic health, and why treating high cholesterol without understanding the bigger picture might do more harm than good. This is a wide-ranging, myth-busting conversation, so whether you're negotiating midlife changes, supporting someone with heart concerns, or simply curious about taking charge of your health, there's something in this episode for everyone. Dr. Riaz Mattara, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the Reinvent Health Podcast today. Most of us grew up believing that elevated cholesterol was a death sentence. Is this still the case? What have we learned about cholesterol over the past few years? And is it really the death sentence that most people believe it is?
So, hi, Nikki. Thank you very much. Nice to see you again. And thank you very much for having me on your show. So, look, a lot has changed around cholesterol in the last 50 years. You know, initially, people used to think that cholesterol caused heart attacks. But that's not entirely true, because if you look at who's got the highest cholesterol levels in the world, it's not the Indians or the Jews or the Afrikaners. It's actually the Eskimos on a traditional Eskimo diet. Okay, yet they had the lowest heart attack rate in the world. Also, 50% of people who have a heart attack have perfectly normal cholesterol levels. So there had to be some other factors that are contributing towards risk for developing a heart attack.
Right. So I've got a lot of clients who come along to me, and many of them are perimenopause or postmenopause, and men as well, who are at an age where their natural testosterone levels start to decline. And these are people who've had normal cholesterol, normal HDL, LDL levels their whole life. And suddenly something changes. And they come and see me all gray-faced, and their doctor wants to put them on a statin. What is the connection between changing hormones and elevated or changing cholesterol levels? And is this an issue?
It absolutely is. But I think we need to take a step back, Nikki, to say, well, if cholesterol is not the issue, before we discuss hormones or get into it, then what is the issue? Yeah. You know, why do people get heart attacks in the first place? What is the link and what's the association? So the way to think about this, it's not about cholesterol, but rather something called chronic low-grade inflammation. Okay. So there are many causes of this chronic low-grade inflammation. So firstly, an unhealthy gut microbiome. So unhealthy bacteria in our gut, gum disease, you know, highly refined sugar and starch diets, smoking, stress, chronic stress, all these factors increase what we call inflammation. Now, to understand inflammation, you get two types of inflammation. You get an acute form and what we call a chronic form. Acute inflammation is like when a bee stings you. That's a good form of inflammation because it saves your life. Mm-hmm. But then we have this other type of inflammation that's long-term, chronic, background, low-grade, that sits in our body, in our arteries. And the body will always seek a state of balance. It always tries to heal the inflammation. So it's actually the healing response happening too long that actually causes the problem.
Right.
So this inflammation inflames our artery. The same inflammation is taking the cholesterol from a big fluffy molecule and inflaming it or oxidizing it into a small, dense, sticky form of cholesterol. So the body simplistically thinks, well, if my arteries are inflamed, they're going to rupture. So it attempts the healing process simplistically again by taking the sticky form of cholesterol or inflamed form of cholesterol and putting it at sites of inflammation to heal the artery. Then it relies, excuse me, if the inflammation is ongoing and you keep depositing this inflamed cholesterol, that it's now caused the problem because now there's a narrowing in my artery. So it then takes calcium from our blood and our bones and puts it into the plaque and calcifies the plaque. It's a healing response trying to deal with another healing response happening too long that actually causes the problem. So that's the main reasons why we develop this problem in our artery. So chronic low-grade inflammation. Then there are other factors that contribute towards risk. So firstly, what we call high homocysteine levels. And homocysteine, to think about it, it's a waste product in the body that we don't need for any particular function. But the higher the homocysteine, the higher the inflammation, and the higher the risk of heart attack, strokes, and cancer in our lifetime. And usually the homocysteine is high either because of a genetic abnormality that we have in our genes or our vitamin B12 or folic acid and vitamin B6 levels are low. So something as simple as a nutritional deficiency will increase our risk. Once we start moving on to the hormonal side of things, okay, let's start on the top. So firstly, with your thyroid gland in your neck, if your thyroid is underactive, and this is almost everybody today, okay? Lots of people with hypothyroidism or an underactive thyroid will have higher cholesterol, higher inflammation levels, and that's an independent risk factor for developing plaque in our arteries. If we then move down further the body and we get to the pancreas, okay, as we know, the pancreas makes a hormone called insulin, right, that controls our sugar levels. But many people today are overweight and what we call insulin resistant. Now, insulin, as you know, is an anabolic or a building up hormone. It's a fat storage hormone. But it also, excuse me, drives the inflammation. So that's another reason for creating this inflamed form of cholesterol in our body. If we then move down further, we have two adrenal glands that sit on top of our kidneys. And those adrenal glands make two very important hormones called DHEA and cortisol, which is our cortisone in our body. Now, because of chronic stress, the chronic stress pushes up our adrenaline levels for too high for too long. At the same time, the body's trying to make more and more anti-stress hormones and can't keep pace. So you end up with lower adrenal glands or anti-stress hormones, too much adrenaline in the body for too long. That's what we call an adrenalized state, or medically we call that sympathetic overdrive. When your adrenaline levels again are high for too long, right, it will drive and maintain the inflammation in our arteries. Right, simply put. Then we go down to, if you're female, to your ovaries. Okay? And there are various times in a woman's life that the risk increases. So in younger women with things like polycystic ovary syndrome from high insulin levels, we know that women with polycystic ovary syndrome will have a 30% higher risk of developing a heart attack in their lifetime. Then there's another condition called estrogen dominance, where generally in women, the estrogen and progesterone levels need to be balanced. But in some women, the estrogen levels are very high and the progesterone levels are very low, right? And that state can also increase the risk of developing a cardiovascular or heart event.
Okay.
And then the third time in a woman's life is just before the menopause or during the menopause, where the low estrogen, low progesterone then increases the risk of a heart attack. So before the menopause, women are generally protected. After the menopause, a woman has exactly the same risk as a male of developing heart disease and a heart attack.
Okay? Right.
Remember that estrogen is not just important for giving you a period and for pregnancy and your bones. Every single organ system in the body needs estrogen. So it's a function of what you were like before the menopause that will determine what type of menopause you're going to have.
Yeah.
And the women who were used to higher estrogen levels before the menopause have a greater withdrawal effect, and that's what seems to then maybe put them also at a higher risk. Obviously, it's that plus other factors that we've discussed.
Yeah.
In males, if we move down further, it's the testes. Yeah. And we know today that low testosterone is an independent risk factor for developing a heart attack.
Yeah.
Okay. So men also have a menopause. It's called the andropause. And generally, it will happen 10 years earlier for men than for women, between 35 and 45. So when you're 18 years old, your testosterone levels are very high, your estrogen levels are very low, you're muscular, you're aggressive, you're assertive, you're ambitious, and high sexual function. Between 35 and 45, and it can be earlier or later for some guys, the testosterone drops and the female hormone estrogen rises, so the ratio changes. Okay,
yeah.
That's when guys will either have an affair, get divorced, start gaining some weight, have breast issues, start losing their hair, lower sexual function, invest in multiple new businesses that will fail, because we don't know what the changes mean in our body emotionally. After the age of 55, okay, it changes again, where the testosterone drops even more and the estrogen rises even more. So if you look at a guy after 55 and if you look at a woman after the menopause, the estrogen levels are also very similar, okay? And it's that low testosterone in relation to a higher estrogen that's actually the risk factor, not just for heart attacks, but also for things like an enlarged prostate and prostate cancer.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of
sorry,
sense.
It's a lot, but I've just briefly gone from top to the bottom.
No, that's perfect, because what it's making me think of is when we see patients who go on to HRT, women going on to HRT, and we see men supplementing their testosterone, whether it be by, you know, creams or nature identical products, we see improvement in those LDL cholesterol scores. So what's happening, what is actually happening biochemically to improve that number?
So we know that, like in the menopause in women and in males who are going through their deficiencies, that the deficiency is what pushes up the cholesterol level. It's the way it's metabolized in the body. Remember that when a woman goes through her menopause, you make estrogen in two places in the body,
right?
Okay? In the ovaries and in the fat cells. So when the estrogen levels start to reduce 2 to 5 years before the menopause and then stop in the menopause, okay, the body has to find the estrogen from somewhere else. So it makes you put on weight centrally to convert some of that fat into estrogen. And it's putting on that weight and the changing metabolic profile that will push up the cholesterol level. And it's the same for men, or similar for men.
Similar. So it's sounding like the fact that we are living longer lives is a causative factor. You know, if we were living to an average age of about 55, 65, like we did 50 years ago, we wouldn't be seeing these declining levels and we wouldn't be seeing the issues we are now, but we're living longer as a species. So we've got to take action if we want to carry on this trajectory. And like you mentioned earlier, the stress levels that most of us are living with seems to be causative. So, you know, it looks like it's all a lifestyle issue. It's the fact that we're living longer. It's the fact that we are stressed, that we're not taking steps, that we are not getting enough sleep, that we're not looking after our nutrition. Just the declining B vitamins says to me that we are burning the candle at both ends. So we are really causing our own problem here, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not necessarily that we're trying to cause the problem. I think people don't have an option, right? In the sense that if you look at food and what changed after World War II, why do we have all these issues in the world today? And there are many reasons. But if you look at it from a nutritional point of view, our bodies are starving in the face of plenty.
Yeah.
So although people are eating healthier and are more aware of food, unfortunately, the food does not contain the fruit and the vegetables. They do not contain the nutritional value that it did 20 or 30 years ago. So you need to eat 17 apples today to get the same nutritional value compared to an apple from 20 to 30 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
So remember that a lot of our fruit and vegetables have been picked too soon when they're green, into cold storage, irradiated, so you kill the bug layer on them. So they, it looks nice and it looks nutritious, but it doesn't taste like anything.
Yeah, that's true.
So we consume all these empty calories and our body is starving of the micronutrients that it needs. And again, the body, okay, so let's take a step back.
Yeah.
The average human is made up of roughly 60 plus trillion cells. Only 10% of that 60 trillion cells are actually human cells. What you see, touch and feel. The rest, 90% of us, is a bug layer.
Yes.
So we are literally bugs in shoes, okay? So it's a symbiotic relationship that we have between our human cells and our bugs. We are designed to feed that bug layer what it needs, and the bug layer is designed to create what we call homeostasis or balance, or to protect our human cells from disease and invaders and so on. But because we are starving in the face of plenty and the bug layer is starving, it cannot perform the function that it was designed to do. So we're more likely to get viral infections. We're more likely to get sick. We're more likely to get cancer. We're more likely to get heart attacks and dementia and on and on and on. So the trick, one, so it's the, we are, it's not what we are eating. It's actually what we are not eating today that we need from a nutritional perspective that actually makes us unhealthy. So even though people are trying, I'm not saying people don't try, people are trying. It's just where you shopped for your food.
Yes.
Okay. The second component when it comes to food is the quality of animal protein that we are consuming. So the vast majority of animal protein is all grain fed.
Yes.
Filled with hormones and antibiotics. So a cow, as an example, was never meant to grow up in a feedlot and eat grain.
Yep.
It was meant to roam the field and eat grass. And this is why we know when you eat venison, your cholesterol goes down.
Yeah.
But you eat beef and your cholesterol goes up. And they're both herbivores or plant eaters. What's the difference? So the saying holds true. You are what you eat. If the cow eats grain, and you eat that cow, you become the effect of the grain, which is an omega-6 fat that is again pro-inflammatory and pushes up your cholesterol.
Right.
So that's from the grain. And then the third component of food is that we're eating way too much refined sugar and starch in our diet, which pushes up our insulin levels, makes us gain weight, drives the inflammation, and increases our risk. So if we're going to impact the outcome in people's lives, we need to seriously understand the role of nutrition and the type of food in a modern world that we are consuming. Then the other pillar, as you said, would be, for example, chronic stress, right? We are just chronically stressed, and the higher adrenaline levels maintains and creates the problem, eventually gives us high blood pressure, gives us inflammation in our arteries, okay? And then you've got the third pillar, which are your endocrine or hormonal imbalances that we discussed earlier. So if you break it down into three big pillars, it's chronic inflammation from all the various things that we discussed with nutritional deficiencies. We have something called chronic sympathetic overdrive or a chronically adrenalized state in our bodies today. And the third major pillar are the hormonal or endocrine changes. And then in our food, we have what are called endocrine or hormonal disruptors.
Yeah.
These are things like pesticides and so on our fruit and our vegetables and in our food and preservatives that then influence our hormones and our endocrine function.
Yeah.
So it's a sad story. It's a sorry story. But I think there are, if you're just aware of it, you know, there are ways to overcome all of this.
Yes, it is a sad story because it's almost like, where do we shop? I mean, this is what I teach. It's like, we can't be perfect. We can't all grow our own food, although we can grow a certain amount of our own food, but we can also choose where to shop and how much processed food to consume. I mean, as a consumer, if you demand better, you find better. It isn't impossible. But we can't expect people to be Puritan. So Because this, in this day and age, it's almost impossible unless you live on a farm in the Karoo somewhere.
So the way I would approach it, Nikki, is, and I also tell my a lot of my patients to do this, is firstly try and eat what's in season. Okay,
Yeah.
that's number one. If it smells good, if it smells like a peach, and it tastes like a peach, then it's good for you,
Yeah.
right? Go to your local
Yeah.
fruit and vegetable. Look what has still got sand on the roots and has been picked recently and looks
Yes.
nutritious, and buy those veggies, right? But if you're going to be
Yeah.
buying things with plastic covered on it and it's been in cold storage forever and so
Yeah.
on, you're going to be eating these vegetables and these fruits, but they don't have the nutritional value. You know, eat
There
less
is.
red meat, but eat a better quality. So things like Karoo
Yes.
lamb, venison occasionally, wild fish. So anything that's
Yes.
farmed or mass produced in a major way, okay, is going to have issues for our physiology and our biochemistry today.
I'd like to talk to you more about the importance of omega-3s because, in my opinion, it's one of the most important things that people say to me, what are your top three supplements? If you've only got X amount of money to spend every month, the first thing I say is get the best
Correct.
quality omega-3 you can find. Next one would be magnesium, a good quality magnesium, depending on what you're needing. And the third one would be vitamin D if you're deficient. Everything else is window dressing after that. So let's talk the importance of omega-3 from a anti-inflammatory point of view and a heart health
Very
point of
good
view.
question. So remember, omega-3 is anti-inflammatory and omega-6 is pro-inflammatory. You get two sources, generally big sources of omega-3. You get animal sources and you get plant sources. Okay. The plant sources of omega-3 would be things like walnuts. That's why a walnut looks like your brain. Chia seeds, some flax from omega-3 from flax seeds, and so on. But the body is only able to use 5% of plant-based omega-3 every day. We're actually meant to get the
Correct.
animal sources of omega-3. Now, animal sources would come generally from oily fish, like salmon and mackerel and sardines and so on. But the problem with the
Correct.
salmon these days, it's Norwegian farmed salmon, right? It's what they feed the fish to grow quickly, and then it doesn't have the same effect. If you look at the fat lines on the salmon today, it looks very, very different. So the idea is like you can still get good quality mackerel fillets and things like that. But you know, if you can't get good quality omega-3 anymore, then the way to do this is to supplement an omega-3 oil capsule. But you can't have high three, have high six. You want to drop the omega-6 content in your diet. And generally things like your seed oil, sunflower oil, canola oil, margarine should be a
Set.
no-no because although it's trans fat free, it's high in omega 6. So
Yes.
you want to have things. So when they looked at it from a health perspective, ghee would probably be the best form of fat to use, organic ghee, followed by butter, proper palm butter, olive oil, and coconut oil, right? To use in your cooking. And then we should be
Right.
getting it from some form in our diet from the food that we eat, like the fish and so on. So the trick in all of this is to cut down on the omega-6 oils and stick to the omega-3 oils and fats, okay, and you don't have a problem. Now, the question always that comes up is, well, how much should I have?
Yeah.
Now, when they looked at it, the Eskimos on a traditional Eskimo diet, not an American diet, a traditional Eskimo diet, excuse me, get up to 10,000 milligrams a day of omega-3.
Yeah.
So you overdose really on omega-3. The average American gets 127 milligrams of omega-3 a day, which is very, very low, right? Now, there's many different recommendations, but generally they're saying for optimal health, you need roughly 2,400 milligrams a day of omega-3. If you have a heart-related condition, you may need up to 4,000 milligrams. And if you have a neurological condition like a stroke or epilepsy, you need 7 to 9,000 milligrams of omega-3 per day, which is high. Okay? But I can tell you in over 30 years that I've been testing patients and managing them this way, I have probably 8 or 10 patients whose results blood tests always look amazing. And
Yeah.
they're all on omega-3 every single day.
Yeah.
Okay, a dose of omega-3. And for some reason, remember, all our hormones are made out of omega-3. Our brain, a large portion of our brain is omega-3. 27% of the covering of every cell in our body is omega-3. All the coverings of our nerve is omega-3. So you don't get enough, and the body suffers and struggles with those low omega-3 levels. Also, remember that if you look at this membrane, the cell membrane, the covering of our cells, it's made up of cholesterol and a protein. When we eat the wrong types of fats, the omega-6 fats, the hydrogenated fats, our cell membranes become stiffer. They're not nice fluid level where things can enter and leave the cell. And hence the reason for, and then we know things like attention deficit disorder in children, poor learning, depression. Okay. When your omega-3 levels are low, you have a 50% higher risk of depression. Okay. Your omega-3 supplement, you know, good omega-3 levels, 80% reduction in the risk of sudden death from an arrhythmia. And the list goes on and on of the value of it, right? So I just think, you know, you need to always just trust the quality of the omega-3 that you're taking. Make sure it's not coming from farmed fish. So another good source would be krill oil rather than salmon oil. So are those little crustaceans that you can't see in the ocean that the whales eat. It's the most plentiful food source on the planet. It doesn't contain heavy metals and contains a compound called astaxanthin, which is a great antioxidant. Got vitamin B and vitamin D in it, which is good for our eyes. And so another good form of omega-3 would be krill oil.
Wow. Okay. Now, if a patient came to you and was concerned about high cholesterol levels, high LDL, they're slightly older, what would your approach be? And I am angling towards what are your thoughts when it comes to statins, because there's still many doctors out there that don't even ask questions. They just give you a prescription.
Right.
So let's really dig into the efficacy, the necessity, and who's a good candidate, who's not a good candidate. What are your thoughts around these things?
Right. So before we decide how to treat it, Nikki, you know, the way to look at cholesterol level, you would never, ever in a modern world just do a cholesterol profile without testing your inflammation levels. You have to look at them together. Okay. So a simple test called a highly sensitive CRP with your cholesterol profile would give every doctor invaluable information. And you want to aim to have that inflammation marker below 1. So you could have a cholesterol of 3, but if your inflammation level is above 3, you're still at risk. Or you could have a cholesterol of 7 and your highly sensitive CRP is below 1 and you're not at risk. Okay? So there's 3 tests every patient should be doing today.
Mm-hmm.
A highly sensitive CRP, you do a lipogram or cholesterol profile, and there's a new test that's available for us now called a small dense LDL. That's the test to see if you've got the sticky form. And it's quite interesting because you may find, hey, my cholesterol's 4, it looks amazing. But then you find that your small dense LDL is high and your hsCRP is still high. That means you're still at risk. So it's this dual approach to reducing your risk. You want to keep the inflammation levels below 1, okay? So I call it my rule of 1. I've come up with my rule of 1. You want your highly sensitive CRP below 1, your small dense LDL below 1, your HDL, or what they call so-called good cholesterol, above 1, and you want the triglycerides below 1. Now, if you can get those 4 things right, okay, you minimize your risk significantly of forming plaque in your arteries. Now, to treat or not to treat, again, it depends on who you're seeing. Every patient is different, and the risk profile is different. Okay? So I find that you get a lot of young women, let's say 22, the cholesterol is 5.4, and suddenly they've been put on a high dose of a statin, which destroys their lives. So I'm not saying people don't need statins altogether. There are certain times when some people may need a statin or other forms of cholesterol lowering, but you can't look at your cholesterol in isolation anymore. You have to look at it in
Right.
relation to the inflammation levels in your body. Okay? But that's the way to sort of approach it. Crucial would be lifestyle and looking at your diet. And as we discussed, have high omega-3, low omega-6, eat grass-fed animal protein, eat less animal protein, but eat a better quality. Use the right oils in your cooking, and you'll find actually that a lot of your cholesterol comes down and that inflammation comes down. If after 3 months you're still not succeeding, then it becomes a more in-depth discussion of what else we can do to get the cholesterol down and the inflammation down.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Earlier on, you mentioned the causes of inflammation and you mentioned gum disease.
Yes.
Now we know this is one of the biggest causative factors of a heart attack. How does that happen?
Yeah, so it's actually quite fascinating. At some stage, the periodontist thought they discovered the cause of heart attacks.
Right.
And then at some stage, in somebody who had died and they did a post-mortem, they found evidence of chlamydia, which is a sexually
Yeah.
transmitted disease in the plaque.
Right.
But it wasn't the chlamydia itself or the gum, it's what that does to the body.
Right.
So whenever you have this, whatever causes this chronic form of inflammation will drive your risk.
Right.
And this is why people with autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, as an example, will have a higher risk of a heart attack.
Oh.
It's the inflammation that's the key word or buzzword that you want to remember here. Okay? So something is taking that cholesterol from a big fluffy molecule and condensing it into a small sticky form of a molecule that sticks to our inflamed arteries. Now, as I said, we can discuss there are many reasons why we have inflammation, but by far the commonest reason would be our gut. Okay, inflammation at the level of the gut wall, and by extension, it starts in our mouth. So if we have gum disease and unhealthy gums and periodontitis and infections and gingivitis and all of that, okay, that goes on for a long period of time and maintains this background or low-grade inflammation in our body. The side effect of having that inflammation is that it's going to inflame our arteries and at the same time inflame or oxidize the cholesterol into a sticky form.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, what about ApoLipoB? This is something that we're hearing about all over the place. It's not something that was tested in
Yeah.
the last couple of years, but it's becoming more prolific now. What does that tell us?
Yeah, so that's like a sub-protein or sub-fraction of LDL, right? Now, it gives you the same information, Nikki. So whether you measure the lipoprotein little a or ApoB, it's telling you that it's ultimately the inflammation that drives those elevated levels. So you don't need to test all of them. So if you do your cholesterol profile, you did a small dense LDL and a highly sensitive CRP, you're actually getting the same information. Whatever you're going to do to treat that with your anti-inflammatory diet and omega-3s and so on is also going to impact your
Yeah.
lipoprotein and ApoB levels.
So it really all comes back to the person in the driver's seat. It's not about what we're prescribing. It's how well are you looking after your life? Are you taking measures? Are you looking after your stress? Are you making better choices? Are you eating unprocessed foods? So it really is, again, no matter which way we want to swing this, it's what are the choices we're making for ourselves. And it's not about being perfect, it's being mindful.
You are what you eat, okay, at the end of the day. So that's ultimately what it boils down to. Now, you have to ask the question, why in the last 50 years we've had great cholesterol
Yeah.
lowering medication, but we have not truly impacted the outcome? More and more people are still having heart attacks and strokes and cancers and things, but
Yeah.
why? You know? And I think we've missed the boat entirely, is that it's got zero to do with your cholesterol. It's got everything to do with inflammation. Okay, so it's the combined effect of inflammation and the effect of inflammation on our cholesterol profile and the lining of our arteries that's actually truly impacting the risk,
Right,
okay, and what
right.
we're seeing today.
You know, I can't leave this conversation without asking you a question about alcohol. And again, it's something that is becoming far more
Right.
apparent how inflammatory alcohol is, where we were told 20 years, have a glass of red wine because there's some resveratrol in it, which should is an antioxidant. And we know that's nonsense. I mean, you'd have to drink so much wine to get the effect of the resveratrol. What are your thoughts on moderate, not even excessive alcohol consumption, but even moderate alcohol consumption when it comes to inflammation, not even heart health?
Again, it's a stepwise thing, right? You start off drinking and you have a glass of wine or you have whiskey every night and you're fine. And then that you start increasing the amount and increasing the amount, or you don't drink Monday to Friday and you binge on a Saturday. Now, that excessive amount of alcohol, the body has to metabolize. Okay. Also in women than in men, because the enzyme to break alcohol down, called alcohol dehydrogenase, is lower in women than in men. So that's why women need less to have the same effect of the alcohol on their bodies. Okay? So, when you consume excessive amounts of alcohol, you're ex again consuming excessive amounts of calories, especially all the sweet drinks and things that people drink today and so on. And that sugar content and that free fatty acid content is what's going to drive the insulin resistance and make you gain weight. The excessive amounts of insulin drives the inflammation, drives the weight gain, drives the change in your cholesterol profile, drops your good cholesterol, okay? Damages your liver, okay? So, I mean, all the effects of alcohol. So, I just feel that with alcohol, with like everything else in life, okay, the minute you're gonna overdo it and have too much of it, or the load of it is too much in your meals or your diet, you're going to have a problem. Okay? Our body was never ever designed to have breakfast, lunch, and supper and two snacks a day. That's a lie. That's from the 60s with the food industry trying to sell you more cereals and food and everything else. We actually don't need that many calories. So when we consume these excessive amount of calories in the form of highly refined sugar and starch and too much alcohol and nutritionally deficient fruit and vegetables, the microbiome suffers, the bud layer suffers. And that the body does not have the capacity to create homeostasis or balance anymore. So the reaction to the deficiencies is to drive the inflammation and make us ill. And a different way of thinking about our healthcare today, it's actually the body's attempt at healing you that's happening for too long that actually causes the disease or the illness. It's the healing response gone long over a long period of time.
Yeah, these diseases don't just happen overnight. They brew for years before they become really serious.
Correct. Now, to give you some interesting numbers, 60% of the American population will have inflammation levels. So generally, you want it below one. Between one and two, you're at a moderate risk. Above three, you're at a higher risk. 60% of the American population have an inflammation marker above three. Okay. Now, it's probably similar here in South Africa. Now, if you think 60% of people walking around have this chronic low-grade inflammation going on, now we can understand where the risk comes from. It's our environment.
It's not a mystery. Dr. Motara, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much.
I hope you found this conversation with Dr. Riaz Motara as enlightening and as empowering as I did. It's clear that when it comes to heart health, there's really a one-size-fits-all answer. Cholesterol is part of the story, yes, but understanding the context around your results, your hormones, your lifestyle, and your unique biochemistry is absolutely essential. If there's one thing you can take away from today's episode, let it be this. Don't just chase numbers, pursue understanding. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed today's conversation, please consider subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing this episode with someone you care about. And if you'd like more content like this or to connect with me, head over to my website, reinventhealth.co.za, or you can find me all over social media. Until next time, stay curious, stay empowered, and take small steps every day towards the healthiest version of you.